All right. I just hit record. Give me the news break you just told me off air.
Oh, yes. Breaking
Repeat
news.
It beep, for beep, the beep, listeners beep, at beep, home.
Beep, 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 beep. Breaking news. So what's happening is Pepsi, the latest in Pepsi innovation, they're bringing pineapple Pepsi only to Little Caesars. Not if you buy a pineapple pizza. You have to buy, I think, like a pepperoni. So what's going on there? Wouldn't you expect it with the Hula pizza have some pineapple Pepsi?
This is coming on the heels of their Peeps-flavored Pepsi campaign, right?
That's right. See, that was the latest Pepsi.
Which, of course, they should have called Peeps.
The Douglas Dank Podcast.
That's brilliant. I mean, it should have been Peepsy, and you should have been able to take one and put it in the microwave and see if it expands up.
The thing is, I didn't want to buy it because I didn't want to be disappointed when there wasn't colored sugar floating on top or in every sip. It, like, gets on your lips.
Yeah, like, gets everywhere, gets on it.
Yeah, it gets everywhere.
Yeah.
Like sand.
Yeah, it really should have that. And they should have also, where were the Pepsi-flavored Peeps?
Cola Peeps.
Why couldn't they go the other way, too? Because they could flavor it with every other thing. Like, there's gingerbread Peeps, there's peppermint Peeps, cotton candy Peeps.
Yeah, the world has gone insane.
It's gone Peeps crazy. Mocha-dipped Peeps is probably what I blame the downfall of society on. Well, anyways, let's get cooking. It's hot under the covers.
That is the name. This is the Douglas Dank Podcast. I am Nathan from the band Douglas Dank, and who are you?
Henry from the band Douglas Dank.
Very good.
Good thing we're both here.
And this is a special episode, breaking the format, because instead of breaking down one song, we're going to go like a quick track by track look at what's going to be our next upcoming release, which you just said the title. What's the title of it?
Well, it's Hot Under the Covers.
Hot Under the Covers, which, yeah. Like the word is in there, the word covers, because it is a collection of 8 cover songs that we have done for years and made some new, polished up, shiny, new-ish versions of.
Yes, okay. Well,
we can... I know what the songs are on this. Let's talk about the first track for this album.
Okay.
Which is Well All Right.
That's a classic.
Do you remember the first time we played this song?
Oh my goodness, that was probably almost a decade ago, 8 years ago.
I would say it was like the second song we ever recorded together.
Wow, so it might be like 9 years ago?
Well, who's even got a calendar these days?
Band history. Yeah. I remember a recording session. Yeah.
Well, All Right is a Buddy Holly song. I've always liked it. So previous to that, we had done a Gang of Four song. I found that Essence Rare. We were just starting out, and we actually recorded them on 4-track tape, you recall, way back in the day. On that one, it was, you know, it was like me on guitar and singing, and you were doing bass and drums. No, we actually had an app that did the drums.
Wait, did we? No, I don't.
I found that Essence Fair. It was like a drum app, like a drum machine app. Like did it like a.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so I think I did bass on that one.
You did bass and you did background vocals, and then we did a similar approach to Well All Right originally, like an app doing the drums and. Playing guitar and you playing bass. This version, though, of all the tracks on this album, this one is the one that was most redone. This is just completely done over again from the ground up. So if anybody has the bootlegs of our early version, maybe those are more valuable now.
Yeah, they are. They probably are. I mean, that's like the unplugged version, essentially. Well, I guess you could call it a demo version, maybe.
Yeah.
It would be rarities and outtakes. Once we put out our rarities and outtakes album, that'll be on there. Because this has become the definitive version.
No one needs to hear that other version with the... Well, like, when it came to each of these songs, and we had an existing version, you know, I could... It was like a choice. Like, how much of the original version to save or to use, and how much to replace, you know, like either you're talking about considerations about the quality of the original, just the recording quality, or how well it was played, how organized it was, because if we didn't play to like a click track or metronome, it makes it difficult to add things if it's not in a consistent tempo. But I think biggest issue with this song that made me just completely start over, actually, was this thing I discovered where, like, if there's a song where the singing is in a range that I'm not good at singing, the trick is to change the range of the song instead of force myself to strain my voice.
Makes sense.
So, like, you know, change the key higher so that I could sing it. So
okay, so you basically transposed it to another key.
Yeah.
As part of the process.
Yeah.
But I would argue, though, the other one does have a raw energy, live energy TM.
I think I had fun in this arrangement of it too. Just changing the rhythm of like the strumming of the guitar from like the original song. And so I think the song is, you know, later we can do a podcast where we go more in depth on a track on like a instrument by instrument basis. I figured we'd play each song after we discuss it. I'll play Well, All Right. It's the track one.
Dreams and wishes you wish in the night when lights are low. Well, all right, well, all right, we'll live and love with all our might. Well, all right, well, all right, our lifetime of love will be all right. Those foolish kids can't be ready for the love that comes their way. Well, all right, well, all right, well, all right, well, all right, we'll live in love with all our might. Well, all right, well, all right, well, all right, well, all right, a lifetime of love will be all right.
Really good.
You know, I like the intro, and it does strike me that it is more stylistically, you know, it really does kind of fit its own style a little more than the other one. The other one was a little bit more like the song itself.
Yeah, the other one we were just, it was still us figuring out recording and how we're playing and stuff, so we just did more straightforward play from a tablature or whatever.
Right, right, exactly. It's a good summer rocker. Yeah, well, and another thing about that song is it's not your typical Buddy Holly cover. Most people would do a more known song.
Yes, we're not James Taylor.
Right.
Crapping all over Buddy Holly's. I don't remember which song he did, like Every Day or whatever. It's so horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Because like to me... I hear the Buddy Holly songs, and I hear him as a rocker, not as like a lame wad.
That's true. Yeah, it shouldn't right? be like...
And like, so, you know, he's at a time when they don't have the distortion and all the different sort of things that they have now. But like, you know, imagine if he were coming out now writing those songs, they'd sound more like this.
Right. And I'll bet when he was live, it sounded a little more upbeat even than the album. You know, it was a little faster. Sure. Yeah, but they had to slow it down, I think, for the sake of the albums and what was on the radio at the time, you know.
Well, they had all sorts of notions. I mean, he was trailblazing a lot of things about recording, but they had all sorts of notions back then about, oh, well, you can't have too much bass because that'll make the needle skip out of the groove and things like that.
Oh, right, right.
The way they mix things. Anyway, so the next song on this album is I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. Were you surprised to hear this one?
Well, you know, when we did it originally, we kind of just threw it together. I mean, again, had that live energy, you know.
This is a recording that really predates even our band, because this is something I brought into the band from some of my previous recording endeavors.
That's right.
And features a guest vocalist from the Calm Down Catherine podcast, Catherine. Sings on that, and it's something we recorded many years earlier. And so this version, actually, again, it's like, oh, well, what do you keep and what do you have to change? And I'll tell you, like, it's the same vocal performance from our classic recording. You know, you shine it up with some new technology that was originally recorded onto a tape, but I think I've replaced everything else. I think my vocals too were original. Gosh, I don't know, the year 2000 or something like that.
Oh man, wow.
But
did another version. Did we never record it? We sat down and did a version. Maybe we didn't record it.
Maybe we probably played it live.
That could have been it, because we did have our epic live show.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, all our live shows, because of how what a storied, experienced band we are, you know.
It was such a hot show that all the tapes had to be burnt.
Yeah. You know,
they were too dangerous to leave out there. It's like the whole burn after reading kind of thing, but with our live show, that live show in particular.
Again, when I remade this song, it's another like, what do I hear in this song? Or what can it do? And it sort of stripped down the instrumentation during like the verse so that it's mostly just drum and bass and vocals and the guitar coming in more with the chorus, making it more, I don't know, makes it more dangerous, you know.
There you, yeah,
dare
you can feel
to,
that.
Dare people to try to make us their stepping stone, you know.
Hey, that's true. And it does have like a again that quality of it's its own thing. It's not, you know, it's you really we make it your, you know, your own when instead of the artists, you know, it's like a good cover should be. And it's not, again, some stupid, like, you didn't do it on an acoustic breathily or anything. And slow.
You're going to be eating those words when I put out a whole album like that. Track
is
one.
That, is that the
track that one, the, our famous version of Surfing Bird.
Hey, that should be on there. That could be the album Ethereal Ruminations.
No, we neglect. So like this, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, of course, is originally a Monkees song. I know some of you might think they originally heard the Sex Pistols version, but it was the Monkees first, and it was written by Boyce and Hart.
So you're telling me Minor Threat just ripped off Sex Pistols? Because then Minor Threat did their version for all the straight edge people.
Yeah, they were singing about a glass of beer.
Yes.
The glass of beer is not their stepping stone.
Well, good thing that movement kind of went away.
Sure, it's still in somebody's basement. Is the straight edge movement now the incels?
That could be. But so you're saying they weren't straight edge by choice. They just happened to be straight edge.
I don't know. I
because
I
couldn't get beer.
Never really was in a scene where you bumped into very many straight edge people. So
yeah, usually they would just look on. Their whole job was to be there and look on disapprovingly.
Yeah, it was always just like one kid with a X marker on their hand or something.
Yes. Yeah. Those shows were epic. They made everyone sit down. They would, you know, because if they were too raucous.
How absurd.
Someone might get hurt. Y'all got to sit down while we play our rockin' tune.
Concern for people? What's up with that?
But if you're going to do that, shouldn't you be doing ethereal ruminations, not like hardcore, you know, music? That's like playing like Bollywood type jams, but then saying, no, you can't dance. Can't dance. You got to sit still.
That's funny. Like, now sit down and revolt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Are you with us? Then sit down and cross your legs quietly while we rock the house.
Sit down quietly and listen to us sing songs about how you should never listen to what anybody tells you.
Yes. And don't drink.
Never have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's like, for those at home who don't know, this is going to, what follows is going to be a really dumb joke that is for an audience of like me. For those of you who don't know, straight edge is what would happen if punk rock were invented by John Calvin.
By John, the religious reformer?
Yeah, the Swiss reformer.
He was against everything fun,
he's
right?
Against
in the
everything service. Fun. Yes.
Yeah. That's what Footloose is based on, right? John Calvin's.
Yeah, he's the inspiration for like the Puritans and everything.
Yeah.
And the English Civil War.
That's not a bad joke. That's a good highbrow.
I'm just saying the audience is like very small amount of people.
That's like the Heisenberg joke, the classic one. Like a guy gets Heisenberg gets pulled over by a police officer. Excuse me, do you know how fast you were going? No, you were going 90 miles an hour. Now I don't know where I am. I love
right.
it, man.
Do we need to give any more introduction to the song?
No, I think you covered it. Monkeys, then Sex Pistols did it well. Minor Threat made everyone sit on their hands while they did it.
All that had to be covered, though. Like, we had to,
yeah,
we had to
well,
get
you need
through
the
that
whole
territory.
Context, right? And then the Monkees may have reclaimed it. Well, I don't know if it was in the movie Head. Did they reclaim it in that movie? Well, no, that would have been after, before the Sex Pistols. Whatever. Okay, yes. So you have the full context. Just don't let James Taylor touch it going forward.
All right, for this special episode, we wanted to also bring in a guest vocalist on a few of these songs. So we've been talking about Stepping Stone. I don't know if you've heard us talking about it. What do you recollect about the recording of this song?
Well, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, because truthfully, I zoned out once you and Henry really started chit-chatting. But this, Nathan, for those of you at home, Nathan and I have known each other for like a long time, like since college. And so I remember like Stepping Stone is like the first time we tried to record anything. It was like one of the houses that you were renting with your buddies in the basement. It was like this weird dungeon of a basement.
Mm-hmm.
So we set it up down there and we did it down there. And truthfully, like we didn't have a lot of studio magic at the time. Like what you recorded is what you got. So I was always like, I would cringe a little bit at the beginning because I felt like it was like a little bit off key. And then you got like a little more.
Punk rock, baby.
Yeah, I figured it was punk rock. And you know what? I don't like to do more than one or two takes. So I was like, you know what? It is what it is. But then you got a little bit of studio magic, a little bit of auto-tune. You fixed that like first note right up for me. I really appreciate that. And then with the like latest remix of it, we were passing around that copy on like, you know, mixtapes and stuff for a while to try to get some buzz. But once you did the latest remix, it was weird. It wasn't like the notes were wrong, but it kind of sounded just like someone talking instead of someone singing. I like really liked the way you put the reverb on it.
Well, whatever works for the song, right?
Yeah. Like it made it sound like music instead of just like I am a robot singing a song.
Does it feel weird that it's like coming out as a Douglas Stank song and not like our previous recording projects?
Hey, you know, whatever it takes to get to our fan base, I'm cool with that. But on my band that I'm claiming, if I release it ever as my own band, I'm going to call it Vigo Betrigo.
Ah, sounds good name.
It is a good name.
Seems like Henry doesn't have any questions.
Interesting thoughts, Catherine. That's
you were awfully quiet while she was on here.
I think he's impressed.
Well, I just wanted to hear the whole story.
All right, so we'll play. This is going to be I'm Not Your Stepping Stone by Douglas Tank, track 2.
You use on me. You're reading out of my fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scenes. I said, I'm not your stepping stone.
That's not me, girl, never me.
I said, I'm not your stepping stone.
All right, so the next song, track 3 on our Hot Under the Covers album, is it's a departure from the first two. First two, you might say, you know, old-fashioned rock and roll. The third one is the song Careering, a cover of a Public Image Limited song. So this one, instead of being from the 50s and 60s, this one is from Public Image's second album, Metal Box, which I think came out in 1979.
Huh.
So
interesting. On vinyl.
Post-punk.
So it is post-punk then. It's no longer in the punk. Is it because it's the Sex Pistols were punk and this comes after the Sex Pistols?
Well, I mean, there had to be a term because the punks were moving away from, you know, the stripped-down simple rock that's just three chords and shouting and or whatever, however you want to call it. I'm not trying to insult punk, but like you know, some of them, like I always like to think, like, you know, Johnny Rotten kind of did punk, one album with the Sex Pistols, and, you know, moved on to some other things. He was into other things, brought other sounds in, and you know, with Public Image and this album, they did this other thing. They weren't just, it would have been easy enough for him to make money putting out more punk albums, and instead he's going in another direction.
Which was punk of him to be post-punk.
Yeah, I think so. But
all right, well, let's go ahead. And didn't you also tell me that at that time they were doing multimedia shows and nobody understood what the hell was going on?
Well, we're here to talk about our performance of the song, though.
That's right? True. Well, did we do a multimedia? We covered it live. No, we didn't cover it live, but we had some of that punk spirit when we originally recorded it, but I'd like to hear this recording, and it still retains the core essence.
What did you say after hearing this song? What, you texted me something about it.
Oh, yeah, it was unhinged in a good way. It retains the energy.
This song we had originally recorded a few years back and perform it and stuff, and so when getting ready for this release to go out on all the streaming things, I get back to it, and I made some, I'd say this one has some minor changes. I did some fun things with warping some of the synth tracks a little more. Like, I redid the guitars, but it still retains that you did, like, the drums and the bass, and so that's still your performance on those. And just,
oh, nice. Okay.
I cleaned it up a little bit sound-wise. I think I redid the vocals.
Now, did the sawhorse performance stay in?
Sahar's performance is still in there, where the banging sound that you hear in the song is drumming on an aluminum sawhorse. Does sound different because it's like I did something different with the equalization and stuff. Maybe some reverb. Maybe there's nothing much else to say about this song. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, it captures the spirit of the original, but different. But I mean, I guess that's cliche to say, but I mean, it fits the mold of what we've done.
It's interesting because this collection of songs, there's most of them are short, and there's one other like post-punk song on here, like a Joy Division song, and those are the two longest songs. The two post-punk songs on are much longer than the rest. Right, most of the other songs are like they're all under 3 minutes. Some are close to two, or you know, whatever. But those two are almost 5 minutes long. But you know,
does that compare in length, by the way, to the originals? Then were the originals?
Yeah, I think so.
Long?
I think so.
All right.
This song sheds light on one thing that you might say. Oh, what's influence on me personally? You know, in formative years after listening to punk, I was like, oh, you know, Johnny Rotten, he did this other thing later. Let me listen to that and discovering that. And so when it was like, oh, we're looking for songs to play as we get our band going. And I was listening to a lot of Public Image. I think this one became one we played kind of because the structure of the song is just sort of like a repetitive bass and drum thing. And it's like, it's pretty simple to put together, although it has other interesting things going on. I don't know if you would prefer to have done a different Public Image song.
Well, you know, this, I don't know. I think this one kind of captures the essence of being different, not being punk, you know, not being, but also it's interesting how they fill the sound space differently than they were doing with punk. It's so different. It's more. It's even almost more minimal while being more sophisticated. There's like more open space, more ethereal kind of room experimentation, not rumination, but ethereal. Like,
oh, don't cut them short. There's some ruminations.
There's some ruminations. Okay. No, that's the name of our wispy ethereal ruminations by Douglas Stank.
Well, don't give away what we can sell.
Or it's a cologne, yeah. Yeah, so let's fire it up.
All right, we'll play the song. We've tortured people enough. Let's torture them by playing them the song.
With anticipation, yes, now it's the actual torture.
Across the border, the start of history, the same as mine.
So that was a
third track. Tune.
What made you decide the track order for this album of covers?
I'm glad you asked me that. Now this collection is 8 songs. Now, like I was just saying, some of them are quite short. So lengthwise, it's not approaching like the upper limit of an album really at all. But it's 8 songs, so it's like, oh well, how do you order them together? Because like the temptation is to just put them in like from best to worst, figuring. You know, maybe somebody who hasn't heard us before, they start with track 1 and you want them to hear the best ones, so they'll stick around for some more, and then at a certain point they'll get sick of it, and you know, you don't want a gem to be on the last track and then never hear it because they gave up earlier, right? That's a temptation. But also, do I want to have, like I said, there's a few that are longer than the rest. Do I want to have them like all the short songs and then a bunch of long songs, or you know, they vary in tempo? So what I did is I pretended that it would be ordered like for a vinyl release, right? So two things. One was to have the two, like the first 4 songs and the last 4 songs be somewhat like the total length be somewhat similar, right? A side and B side. And then it was a matter of, like, I did lead off with the song I thought, like, not that it's necessarily, it should be everybody's favorite, but one that was, like, the most catchy song. Like, if you never heard this before, it's the one that'd be easiest to get into. So I put that on track 1. Or the ones that were, like the slowest were, like, the last tracks, 4 and track 8. And then pick the tempo back up with the first song on the second side, track 5. Anyways, that was the thinking that went into it. If you want to follow along, you can kind of see, maybe you'll detect a pattern. Like I didn't, like I said, oh, there's 2 post-punk songs, they're on opposite sides.
Makes sense. So you wanted some symmetry in there. So that
there's some symmetry, but just some, you know, variety.
I would love it if we could do a vinyl pressing of this album.
Maybe we'll have a vinyl best of.
There we go. Okay. Limited release. And they say, though, that color vinyl doesn't sound as good as just black vinyl. Is that true?
I only have ever gotten one, I got a picture disc. I don't know if that's what they're talking about when they're talking about colored, if a picture disc would fall under that. I got a Sublime picture vinyl disc. Like the album art was what the record looks like. Like their album. It was my mistake because I bought it at Hot Topic, and it was like, it's a little bit warped.
Oh, man, so it came warped.
Yeah. I don't think that's the only, I got other worse records from them, like other ones that were more warped. Like, I've listened to it a lot because it's fun to play vinyl, and I always thought, oh, the right setup, the bass sounds good out of vinyl, and so there's some, that Sublime album has some good bass parts. Some songs.
Oh, that is true. Well, thank you for, you know, then let's see if everyone can figure out the pattern too there of the
pattern repeats. The next track is Cuddly Toy.
Oh, that's a classic.
We recorded this. Is another one we did with guest vocalist from the Calm Down Catherine podcast, Catherine. Had you heard this song before we were saying, oh, we're going to do this song?
No, I had not, honestly. I had not heard. It's not like a radio song, you know. I hate to say this, but it is. But wait, is it a Monkey song?
It is. It was a song recorded by the Monkees. Well, we have Catherine back. Do you specialize in Monkee songs or what?
I'm glad you brought that up because of course, when we're talking about Stepping Stone, like everybody knows Stepping Stone and everybody knows that's a Monkee song, right? And I've always been a big fan of the Monkees. And then my kids became really big fan of the Monkees. And I mentioned this to this one guy at work, McNett. And McNett's also a big fan of the Monkees. And McNett had...
Big Monkey Head.
Yeah, he's a Monkey Head. And so he had like their... What do you call it when it's like all their songs? Anthology or something like that? Yeah, so he let me borrow that. And so we were able to like go through and listen to all the songs over and over again from that CD, or it was like a book of CDs or whatever. And like, I never heard the Cuddly Toy song before. I mean, I'm sure I heard it when I was watching the Monkees show back in the day.
They did play it on their TV show.
But was it ever on any of their albums?
You can definitely get it from a recording, certainly. Like if you get like a box set, I'm sure it's on an album, but you can find it streaming.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But I didn't remember it because I mostly knew the best of the Monkees. So to hear Cuddly Toy, first of all, I love it.
Do you know who wrote this song, Cuddly Toy?
Was it one of the Monkees?
It was not one of the Monkees.
What's his name?
It was Nielsen? The first song sold by Harry Nilsson.
Nelson, yes, Harry Nilsson.
He could quit his job at the bank because he sold this song to the Monkees.
Wow.
And when I looked up the information for getting the mechanical license from a website, they had it wrong. They, like somebody lazy, credited the song to Boyce and Hart, the same people who wrote Stepping Stone. And I'd seen the Harry Nilsson documentary. That's kind of what made me interested in this song and why we recorded it. I just thought it was kind of funny, Harry Nilsson writing a song for the Monkees. The song's kind of interesting because it's kind of like...
It's like kind of a mean song.
Kind of weird subject matter for the Monkees to sing about.
Like everybody thinks Davy Jones is a heartthrob and like, oh, he's so sweet and he's so dreamy. But like it's kind of saying like a guy saying to a girl like, you're kind of a slut and like I never told you I was sticking around. And you're not the first slut that I've abandoned. So boom, in your face, right? So like it's not nice.
Sounds like she's complaining and he's like telling her, hey, you're not the only cuddly toy that was ever enjoyed by every boy. You're not the only choo-choo train left out in the rain the day after Santa came. Like, he's saying, like, hey, you know, oh, you don't like how I'm treating you? You don't think I'm respectful enough or you want a relationship and I'm being a jerk? Well, this is just what you deserve. That's what the song sounds like to me.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, those are the lyrics. That's really what he's going for there. Yeah, how was it used in the Monkees? Did Davy Jones sang it even in that?
But then when you see it on the show,
you got to look up the video. Davy Jones sings it, and he's doing it like it's he's got a pork pie hat and a cane and like a striped suit.
They do like this dance number where he does like the my dad calls it like the Axl Rose dance, right? Where he like kicks his legs side to side and kind of wiggles back and forth.
Okay.
That just like made me like it so much more.
That's interesting.
This one.
How the hell did that happen? I mean, so what would they do? They'd get the songs and then figure how to like make a skit out of them or something?
you know, a record company gets the idea that, oh, we're going to do this TV show. We're going to find some people who can act, who can play music, who can sing, and we'll get the we'll buy songs from the best songwriters, and we'll use the TV show and our marketing efforts, and we'll make them hits, right? And
right.
They were teamed up with companies that, you know, represented the best songwriters. And then when it came for the TV show, this song is one where, like, it's not really incorporated in the plot of the show. Like, the show has a plot, and then for some reason at the end, they're singing this song. It's not really explained. It's not part of anything. It's just, here they are on stage singing this song. If you've ever watched The Monkees, that just sometimes happens.
I see, where that's just, they just end it with, like, a vaudeville thing or just random song.
Yeah. Like, the whole episode might be them having zany antics at the beach, and then all of a sudden they're performing a song on a set that's completely not beach-like at all.
Yeah, okay. All right. But I get that recording session mixed up with Auntie Griselda in my mind.
We probably did Auntie Griselda first, I'm thinking, based on some things from the production. So we had done this before, and again, this is one, cleaned up the recording. I think I had to replace the drums, cut and pasted the arrangement of some of the other instruments, and in this mix, made some minor changes elsewhere. Catherine, when she sang it, she recorded a couple different takes in a couple different ways. One where she was singing it more straight, another one where she really went brassy.
I was like trying to sing it a little bit Susie and the Banshees, but I don't know if that really came through or not.
No, I think it's amazing. Henry, you got any questions? He's speechless again.
Speechless.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah, and the instrumentation, it steps above where it was. So that's all. That's fun too, to bring that.
Well, let's let the people decide whether they like it or not. Like I said, this one is track 4. So this is one I thought maybe wasn't something I thought was an instant appeal. I think listening back to it, and then listening to the Monkees version, I was actually kind of surprised that our version is actually slower than the Monkees version. I was a little surprised by that. And I don't know why we did it slow, other than we just did.
Yeah, it just seemed like it fit.
That's the other reason better. Why I really emphasized the brassy thing, because it's the kind of thing where, like, something has to happen outrageous at this tempo. All right, let the people hear it. They can decide to love it.
Enjoyed by any boy. You
we'll move on to side B of our streaming album.
Okay, side
album.
B. Got to flip over your record
you
now.
Flip over from Cuddly Toy, and what do you find as track five? Your Auntie Griselda.
Nice, okay.
Well, this was another Monkey song, so you knew there had to be some contribution from affiliate Monkeys cover song member Catherine from the Calm Down Catherine podcast. What do you remember about what you did on your Auntie Griselda?
So when I mentioned that like anthology that we got of all the Monkees songs.
Yes, from earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, there were like two or three that really stuck out to me that I didn't really know before, but that just blew my mind and I loved them and I wanted to listen to them over and over again. So there was the Cuddly Toy.
Cuddly Toy, yes, of course.
There's one about buying a dog, which isn't even like a real song, yeah, right? No, like I really like that one.
I think they did later record that.
Yeah, and then Auntie Griselda was the other one, because it's just like kind of ridiculous and fabulous all at the same time.
I don't think it's ever played on the radio. Not that like the radio is the be-all end-all, but...
You know, what's weird is I've seen, in the reruns, I have seen all these songs played on the show. And then when I was looking up how to play your Auntie Griselda, the information claimed that it was a hit at the time, or at least it charted.
Right. It just, I mean, they had so many hits that like, that's why on my greatest hits CD only has like, I don't know, how many does a regular CD hold, like 10 or 12?
Yeah.
That's all you're going to get. And so these, I think, must have just barely missed.
The Auntie Griselda was, I remember recording that. We did it, gosh, because like some of the memories like jumbled together about the songs that we've done.
Guest vocals again.
But I think, no, this is me. There are.
Oh, this one is you? Wait, there's a choir. You remember there was
song,
a choir.
There's a choir at the end. The Douglas Stank players or whatever.
The Stankers. Right.
But one of my favorite things to do is like try to put on a kid voice and to see if I can blend in with other kids, like in a children's choir.
Yeah, so you organized the children's choir at the end of the song.
Yeah. So that was really fun to try to like have a kid voice.
And you had to conduct them.
Yeah. I spent a lot of my youth in children's choir at church. Yeah. And I was at like a weird age where there were not a lot of kids exactly my age. Like I was, you know, maybe one of two or three, but there were a bunch of kids older than me or a bunch of kids younger. And so they often needed people to be like, sing with the younger kids. And I'm like, I can do it. And so then I'd join up with the younger kids and try to put on my little kid voice.
Is this about your height?
Just because I'm short, I know. monkeys reference.
Henry, you have any follow-up questions?
7A.
But you also beatbox on this one. You remember that?
Oh, sweet. That made it in there?
I think so, yeah.
Yes. That was my best Fat Boys.
I feel like this is one where we recorded you playing drums and me playing bass together originally and then added other things. So like the original version, it had like a piano loop where I was doubling up like the bass line. Yeah, it had piano heavily and then a lot of guitar tracks.
Oh, between that's the both right. Of us. Yeah, the original had like layers of guitar. Right, we did a bunch of solos, I think, right?
I just think we just had a lot of different tracks because like there isn't really, like there's a section in the middle that's like a break from the singing, but that's when you do the beatboxing and we just make nonsense noise. Because that's like the original song had that too, where they like, they're just sort of messing around or whatever. I was working on this song to get it ready for this, and I had it mostly the same. It was mostly just cleaning up and like slightly remixing it. But then the file kept having this weird problem that I really can't explain still what the issue was, where some of the tracks were like these different piano parts, and they would lock on and then it would shut down the sound. And so you couldn't hear it. And then you would try to mute it. And anyways, so it frustrated me. So then I was like, you know, I'll start over. I'll bring the tracks into another, start a new project file. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just start from scratch. But I didn't really start from scratch. But what I thought was a fun new approach, but I ended up pulled most of everything from the original recording that we did and throwing it in there, and then it's like, so it's like a, it really is like a remix. It's got a new bass line that I also use like a low pass filter at the beginning. So that actually, it's weird because like when it comes in with the bass, it actually reminds me actually of a Public Image song, the way that bass comes in, but then it's a Monkees song. And like, I really, and like, it's almost like a serendipity sort of thing, because I think it really made the song fun to have that. But then the other instruments, I just ended up bringing all the guitars together in one track. Like, I took the bus from the previous project I had, took it down to one track, so all the guitars are together. And the organs that were original, like the synthesizers I played on the recording that we did years ago, brought those over. I like redid the piano, and I really like how it turned out. I don't know if you've studied all the differences, but
okay.
I really like how it worked.
That makes sense. No, again, it's a fun song and surprised me. It's again not one I was familiar with.
All right, well, wait till you hear our version, though, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Here goes. So that was track 5, Your Anti-Griselda. What is track 6? My Evil Twin.
Oh, originally that, by yes.
They Might Be Giants.
Yes. Filtered through like industrial. It's really, it's awesome. It's so unhinged.
You might be taken aback at this one, because this is one that I did with just really mostly without you. Like entirely That's without true. You. Because yeah, entirely. originally this was one of the songs, as I was learning when we made the transition to the Cakewalk program, to throw the curtain back and just thought, oh, I'll learn by doing. This is one of the songs that I was trying some new things and learning how to make it. So this song's actually gone through a lot of different iterations, a lot of different versions. So at first, like a straightforward cover, just like the original, as close as I could without really, you know, practicing for any length of time. And I invited another singer because it's the song's My Evil Twin. I thought I needed someone else to sing along with me, so I invited this other singer, Charles, and he's the evil twin in the song.
Okay. I thought that was two of you.
As I was working,
it's not two of you. It's one of you. It's me and my evil twin, Charles.
And so, as I was working through it, and like, it was just pretty ordinary drums and bass and guitar and a little bit of synth, maybe. Because like the guitar part, like because I don't like practicing a lot, it's involved. Anyways. I wasn't really liking how it was turning out, and which is not that big a deal because it was really a learning exercise to do the song. So I put it aside for a while. Then I came back to it, and I thought, what if I had industrial drums on it? And so I through cranking things with equalization to like amp up certain frequencies and drop others, I made it with these crazy, industrial drums, like it's Ministry or Nine Inch Nails or something.
Yes, yes.
And so there was a version like that was really leaned hard into that, and then I added like a lead, sort of like crazy guitar sounding lead thing onto it. But then when I was getting ready for this one, I actually stepped away from that a little bit, and again, like similar to the last to the version of Auntie Griselda, where like I brought out like the bass, this version of this, which I really like the approach, is like in the original version, there's like a little phrase that's played at the beginning of the song and comes back in the middle. And the idea of that, the way they broke the chords apart, I just made that like that's what the bass does in the song, and just made it a constant motion of like a synth bass, like quick under the song. So I stepped away from the industrial. The industrial drum thing happens a couple of times in the song, but for most of the song, it's that pulsing, like arpeggiated bass line and more of a dance beat for the drums, de-emphasizing so, like the loud guitar. And everything like that. And I really like how it turned out.
You know, that is really interesting. So it's not quite as industrial with the loud guitars, but what made you think when you heard that original song that, oh, this would sound good in this way, with like being more, was it just the process, when you went into the process, basically producing it and creating it yourself for this track? You kind of almost channeled like a Nine Inch Nails kind of Trent Reznor. Okay, I'll just assemble it myself and it'll sound, And you added some of that spirit with the, industrial sound.
So we first picked this song. I wanted to do a song with Charles. And it was like, oh, well, what song should we do? We want to do a They Might Be Giants song. And like, it's funny because you never think of, there'd be some, They Might Be Giants is a band where like, I don't think, oh, of course we're influenced by them or whatever. I don't think of it that way. But like, I've seen They Might Be Giants a ton of times. I might have, they're up there with the band I've seen the most live. And like, I listen to a lot of their different songs, not just like, not just the ones on their first couple of mainstream albums, but like a lot of their newer stuff and everything. And but this was one that we were listening to, and so this is one Charles knew. We recorded it, and like I said, I was trying to learn things, and it was only coming back to it after a pause, releasing other things, coming back to the song, getting a new perspective on it. First, it was the idea that kind of when it went industrial, that was kind of like, let me just figure something out to do with this song and like push it out and be done with it. Like, we sent out a version to our friends and family and whatnot. But then when this album was approaching, and I thought, let's do eight covers. Because there are other songs that we've worked on that we didn't include on this. And I thought, I'll pick eight covers, the ones that are closest to ready to go. Like, it's just finished producing in a relatively short time. And I took a listen to this one, and then just sort of like, because like the last song we did was like a more of a dance approach. Then I thought you know, so then it was like, well, I liked those industrial drums, but it was kind of, it was really kind of silly because it wasn't like that version was something where like I was really sold on this song needs to be 100% industrial, as much as I thought that was a quick fix to making the song something that I could stick out there. And so then I thought I made more of a dance beat for part of the song, and like I said, added this bass element, the synth bass element, and then I really liked it, and so I made that I made that really the centerpiece of the song, and everything else like taking a back seat to that.
I see. Okay. So
like when I approach, to me, the way to do a cover song, I think I might have said this in a previous podcast anyways, is to like take the song and just, if it were presented to you, like a songwriter came to you and said, here's the song I want you to record, what would, if I were going to do it, what would be the approach I would take to make it like my song?
That right, would be exactly. Like, what best would you I could do?
And maybe it's just like the original one, but you know, it's probably something different. Your approach is going to be something different than, you know, the original band or whatever.
Yeah, that's good. And there is a common thread, I think, in these songs, as you do hear the Douglas Stank sound. So it's nice to make it your own versus like just rehashing. Like there's some people who will do a cover and just rehash the song, but just
yeah,
their own vocals or whatever, you know.
Of songs that have transformed from like earlier versions we had, this one is transformed a lot, I feel. Like there is, like I said, there's a minor element of the industrial phase of the song, but like this song, my work on this song has been all over the place, and I feel like this is the best it's going to get. I like it. So
it's almost, that's really cool. It's almost an amalgam of where you were at different points all coming together.
Yeah, it's good. Like, you know, because then it's like, oh, well, we can take various influences and without consciously really trying to force it. Like, it's not like you're like, oh, well, what if we took They Might Be Giants and made it into a Nine Inch Nails song? That's not really how it happened. And then anyways, it's like, no, let's make it like a Douglas Stank song.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, certain elements just pop up. What fits in that song. And the vocals are great, you know, having the contrasting vocals. Well, Charles does have a similar sound to you, I will say, in a good way. So whereas he could be your evil twin.
Yeah, he's my evil twin.
or are you the evil twin? You might be the evil
twin. Well, that's the mystery of the song, though, if you look at the lyrics.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Like one of the last lines is he's, you know, he's identifying his evil twin, and he says, he's even got a twin like me.
And you know, speaking of seeing They Might Be Giants, I think also I've seen them a bunch of times, but I even had to go see Hootie and the Blowfish to watch them open for Hootie and the Blowfish. Just because I wanted to see They Might Be Giants. This was like 20 years ago, yeah.
Because like, I know somebody who recently went and saw Hootie the Blowfish on purpose.
On purpose? Without They Might Be Giants opening?
No. I don't remember who they were. They were with some other band. I don't remember who it was with.
That must have been ironic.
So I've seen They Might Be Giants at least three times. I only remember one time them having another band with them. Like right before COVID.
You saw them headline when they were on like a headlining tour?
Yeah. Right before COVID, we saw them when they were touring and they did the entire album Flood, and then they did another set after that.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Dang. Are they on tour again?
Yeah, they're on tour now. I don't know that they had because they had to finish their obligation for the tour dates that got canceled during COVID. So I don't know you'd have to look to see. They mark the shows that are supposed to be Flood shows.
I see. Okay, I'll have to check that.
Let's play the track. We'll be right back. right. So the next track. Now, this is going to be one that I don't think people would predict that we would cover.
Okay.
The next track, track 7, Iowa Stubborn.
Yes,
originally from the musical The Music Man, so written by Meredith Willson.
Yeah, that's a, now that one's a retro song.
Yeah,
so again, this was like you with guest Catherine.
Well, here, stepping back into the studio, we have Catherine from the Calm Down Catherine podcast. Now, this song we're talking about now is not a monkey song, but what? Here you are as leading the vocalists. And what do you recall about why we decided to do this song from The Music Man?
Well, it's kind of a weird, like, circular story. So it all started when a good friend of mine and her family, Erin, shout out to Erin, was moving to Iowa. I knew we were going to miss them so, so much. And what kind of gift do you get someone who's going to be moving? Because they already have so much stuff they have to pack up. You don't want to get somebody something that they have to also move. That's like just giving them a chore, right?
You're not going
to
give them a plant.
Right. No, that's like the worst thing you can give somebody who's trying to move
even like
across
a big
country.
Novelty hat.
Right. No, none of that is good. So I'm like, you know what? They're moving to Iowa. And you know what? There's only one thing I know about Iowa.
What is that?
It's that The Music Man is set in Iowa. And I am a huge fan of The Music Man.
He's a music man.
Oh, but he doesn't know the territory. But anyway, so I'm a big fan of The Music Man. I was in The Music Man in high school. I was special kicker number 2. And I annoy my whole family whenever we watch The Music Man because I try to recite the whole thing when we watch it. So it was like, hello, if someone's moving to Iowa and you want to record a song for them, of course you're going to do Iowa Stubborn.
If you've ever seen The Music Man, it's the song the townspeople sing when Professor Harold Hill enters River City for the first time, and they're explaining to him how everybody in Iowa's a dick.
Still yet to be disproven, I think.
Well, there's dicks
and
everywhere.
So yeah. It was like, okay, let's see if we can do this. And we had a toga party as Erin and her family, as a goodbye to their family before they moved to Iowa. And it was nice to give them a CD of Iowa Stubborn Plus.
Ooh, a CD.
And I have to say, I appreciated getting one of the first burned copies of it.
Plus some other songs that were recorded. And I believe I don't think we did Iowa Stubborn at the concert. I was not a part of the concert. But I believe Douglas Stank performed at the party, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, Douglas Stank performed, but this song was played from the recording as a surprise.
Yeah, because, we wanted as few people to know about it as possible, so it would be like, oh my goodness. So anyway, my friend Erin, I like to imagine her driving into Iowa, crossing over the mighty Mississippi, and then hitting play, and that song comes on. I hope that it was as welcoming to her as possible.
You hope that it was long enough to actually cover the entire time going over the bridge.
Oh, that would be awesome if it covered the whole time going over the bridge.
We had fun with it. Like, this is like a straight like punk cover. The classic sort of a punk cover approach. You make it faster.
Whenever I record any music, I always want it to be faster than the original. Like, I feel like everything should be faster and everything should be more punk rock.
It's just the classic sort of drum, bass, and guitar going fast. And it has her and me both singing the thing. Although it breaks in the middle for the minuet and G. Now, in this version, have you listened through this version?
Yes, again, but it's been a couple days. But yes. Now, the original version sounded really well blasted out of a car, too. This one out of car speakers.
This version, the minuet in G is played by a marching band, which makes sense. Because it's the Music Man.
Right, exactly. That must have broke the budget, too.
It's kind of like you play mind games. You dare a marching band to play the song, and they don't know you got microphones recording. You got to be standing in the right place, right time kind of thing.
I see. Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of like guerrilla producing. You swap out the music. You got to know someone on the inside. Swap out the music. Get the mics.
Yep.
Go down to the stadium. But it's brilliant.
How do you feel about some of the changes? So this updated version It's a little less raw.
Little more pizzazz.
How do you feel about those changes?
I like the marching band. When it comes to like some of the polish, I have mixed feelings about it because I think it sounds great. But then I also think that like the roughness kind of went with like the sped up more punk rock version that we had before. But hey, polish is always good. It's like we're a real band.
You don't want the rawness to be something that turns off too many people. Because some people like rough lo-fi sort of stuff. But some people will just instantly reject something that's too homemade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we thank you for your time. We know you have a busy schedule going from podcast to podcast and from speaking engagement to speaking engagement. And your famous movie career and everything like that. We want to thank you for coming in. Henry, do you have any follow-up questions?
Well, thank you, Nathan. And thank you, Henry, for having me. It's always a pleasure. I'll see you guys later.
All right, thank you. Let's play the track.
There's nothing in the way. I love the airway. We may not do it all. There's an hour like a hand with a true shoulder and a two-way camera when we're not that we be cold. We can be cold in the cold, in the moves, in the summer, if you mess about with the right to fly. And we're so bright, oh, so we can see it to kill us, but we can't die.
But it, you are contrary. The Minuet in G.
But we'll give you a shirt. So what then? You're welcome. Glad to have you with us. Even though we didn't have a chance, you really ought to give it my life. I'm going to go to the air to play and talk about how we sing with the kids. We are going to play with you. To give you a little fresh ride.
We got one last track. We promised another post-punk song. We promised one by Joy Division. What song did we do?
She's Lost Control.
Oh, you got one right?
Yes, I'm one for eight. Although I knew we did Auntie Griselda and Cuddly Toy. I forgot they were both on this album.
So we did three monkey songs. We have emptied the monkey's chamber. This is the one you texted me about. She's Lost Control. You texted, did hear the She's Lost Control mix recently. Love the minimalist approach. And I quote you here. It says, soft synth, electro set drums. Love it. Can't wait to hear how it's done. The extra instrumentation. Ask me about the soft synth electric drum set.
Yes. Tell me about the soft synth drum set. How did that happen?
There is no soft synth drum set.
It's not?
That is your drumming.
What?
That, remember you have that electronic drum set?
Oh, yes, yeah.
You had that electronic drum set, and that was the original drum beat from the song the first time we recorded it. Gosh, I can't even remember all the versions we've done of the song. Because we've done it, I think we recorded it on tape once.
We did.
Then we had a version we did later that where you played like your electronic drum set.
Yeah.
And we had that out to friends and family, and people might be able to find that bootlegged. Mostly, this is really just remixed a little bit of that version. And so I've got some studio tricks. I took that drum track and it sounds different. It is the same performance. I've, become a better producer, did some more studio tricks, got rid of some of the noise that was on it, fixed some frequency problems with equalization, did some other things. It is the same drum performance. It sounds better and it makes the song better.
That is amazing. You are the studio wizard. I mean, you need to have like a producing name, like DJ Khalid. except then you would have to jump into every track and be like DJ Douglas Stay.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because like the price I love to pay for stuff is $0 free, and so you get a lot of times companies will give away plugins or like soft synths, and to get you on their emailing playing list, their email list, so that they can try to sell you other stuff. And a lot of times they'll like, oh, we're gonna have a contest, and it'll always refer to things as like, oh, make a beat. And like, I'm not gonna be a producer like that. I'm not making beats. I write songs. I don't even like, you know what I mean? Like Catherine from the Calling on Catherine podcast, she was telling me that like, oh, someone she works with, her son makes beats. And like, I am not dissing somebody making that their ambition, but I don't even know what that means. I get that like you think, oh, like hip hop or pop music songs might be constructed where you purchase somebody else's tracks and then you just sing over it or something, or you rap over it or whatever. But like, I write songs, I record songs, you know, I'm not gonna like create when they say they make beats, are they talking about more than just a drum beat? Are they talking about just making an instrumental track and then selling it? Because like, if you could go to these sites and you can buy instrumental tracks, like they sell. I'm no interested in looking at this stuff, because it's like they'll sell it like this. They'll be like, for this low price, you can get a non-exclusive rights to the song. You can record it and distribute it, but we're gonna keep selling it to other people too. But for this, like for like 10 times the price, you get exclusive rights where they won't sell it to anybody else.
What the hell is going on? I mean, aren't they all like mostly like 4/4 like dance beats? I mean,
well, that's the thing. Are they doing anything
like innovative? Like,
I don't know, because I'm not interested in hearing these things. Like, you know, like I don't want to hear them and then it like seeps into my mind and now I'm re-recording something somebody else wrote already.
You know, and then they're like, oh, you took my beat.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure. They must mean more than just a drum beat, right? When they say beats.
Because
in my mind, you say beats, that's what you think mostly, right? You think a drum beat. But right. I think they mean like the whole instrumental part of like a pop or rap song.
But that's bizarre, because isn't that just selling a song? Like,
that's what I think.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say song. I make beats. I'd say I write songs.
Yeah, right, exactly. I literally think, though, honestly, that they're just selling beats, like just the drum, maybe the bass part, you know, too.
I think it's a variety. I think it can be all things. Some people are selling drum beats. Other people are selling like full instrumental tracks.
But they probably add like compression and flanging and like, you know, the flanging of the flagel.
If you want to sell it, you add that air horn.
It's not like any of the beats are like Take Five or something. They're trying to sell these jazz beats that are like these complex things. Most of them, like, you can play on like a MIDI keyboard, like with two fingers. Most of like dance beats, like, or four fingers, like. You're like, oh, I'm going to sell you that beat.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I'm not going to create a DJ identity and announce it at the beginning of the song, because like, if a song starts out where it's like, doom, 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 DJ Khaled, I know to change it.
Yeah, right, exactly. To me, that's like, okay,
thank you for the warning. I will listen to something else.
You're right.
So I'm not going to give people that opportunity. I want to sneak up on them.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They got to find something new to hate about every song.
Yeah. It can't just be you shouting your name. But you are the wizard, man. You should have some sort of like wizardry, you know.
This song, all right, we've done She's Lost Control a number of times, different versions. Was this a song that you were familiar with before I was like, hey, let's do this song?
No. Joy Division. And then also that Gang of Four song we did was also awesome. And that kind of blew my mind, too, hearing that, because of all the instrumentation. And again, this was this considered post-punk or
post-punk?
New
wave? Post-punk.
Yeah.
I think
they were really good at, Joy Division seemed really good at deconstructing kind of things.
So Joy Division is a bridge between punk and new wave, because, you know, Joy Division had a couple of albums and a number of singles, and then the singer killed himself and the rest of the band became New Order, one of the biggest bands of the 80s.
That's wild that they became New Order, because to me, yeah, it doesn't sound like New Order.
No, but it's like a bridge work, because Joy Division is, for the most part, drum, bass, guitar, although one of their hits is like a synth lead, like Level Terrace Apart. But like the reason, if you remember, like the fun part about She's Lost Control is that it's a song where it's like a bass lead. Like the bass is the corner of the song, not the guitar.
Yes. Yes. That appealed to me in the same way that Gang of Four had a bunch of songs where the bass is doing that.
The first time we recorded, I think it was you on the bass and me playing drums. The first time we recorded it.
Yeah, that could, I think so. And then later,
later that was on tape. We redid it, yeah. No, but Joy Division was another band that, like, when I was like, oh, let me see about things. I grew up, first, you listen to, like, what your parents listen to. Then you make some friends, and they're like, oh, you should listen to Metallica. And then it was like, oh, what about this punk rock? And you listen to punk rock, and you're like, oh, let's listen to the original punk rock. And then it's like, well, what about what happened after that, you know? So that you get Public Image, got into Joy Division and Gang of Four. What I always find funny is, you know, I live in a college town. I'll see college-age kids walk around, and they'll have a T-shirt that's like the artwork from, like, the first Joy Division album. And it's like, this could be before your parents were born.
Right. Yeah, the college kids now.
You know?
That's true.
it's like, so weird. Like, it's not like I'm saying they're not allowed to listen to it. I think it's, you know, yeah, because I would say it has influence on modern music more than a lot of other stuff of its time. And especially, I think there was a sort of a revival of their approach to music. I want to say like 10, 15 years ago, there were a bunch of bands that were kind of copying a lot of what Joy Division was doing and their approach. Yeah. But yeah, this one was fun to play. And then it helped inspire us to do our Man-Eating Zombie Cat songs.
Yes.
Let's play this song for our audience. They waited long enough to hear the last track of the album. I think I really like this version, how it turned out. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say this is the last time we record this song or we release a version of it. I really like
it. Unless we release a live version.
Yeah, that'll be, if we do it again, it'll be because, you know, live from Wembley Stadium or whatever.
Right. Or from, we could do it from Our Lady of Lourdes talent show.
Well, sure. The holy battle of the bands.
Yeah, the battle of the bands.
If you book it, they will come.
Right, exactly. Did I tell you I had to decline? Someone wanted me to help them out on like playing one of these, like, they had some show they had wanted to do, and they had this band they put together, but then they're playing like freaking like synth rock. What were some of the songs? I blacked it out of my mind. It's like, no, I can't help you with that. I'm sorry. Stuff has come up.
You didn't want to play synth rock? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like this cheesy, like, God, find the cheesiest yacht rock, synth rock.
Oh.
Like, they never heard the what's that? Oh, and the coolest thing, I suppose, quote unquote, they wanted to do was a Cure song, but it's the one Dinosaur Jr. has done better. Yeah. And I was like, did you hear the Dinosaur Jr.
Just
version?
Like, heaven.
No, who's that? What?
Dinosaur Jr. version. You see that? The video's awesome.
Yes, yeah.
With the little puppets.
Yeah. And they're like slightly younger than us, but like they never heard of Dinosaur Jr. Like, what the hell were they doing during the 80s and 90s? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I could tell you how bad their set list was going to be. I hope they're not listening, but they probably aren't because they wouldn't listen to Douglas Stank. They're only going to listen to like members of Chicago.
You know what? I'll let anybody listen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If they want to, I don't want to take that away from them. Everyone should be allowed. Everyone should be allowed. I'm not going to be elitist about it, but I certainly, we had a lot of, as an entity.
We had a lot of synth on our last album. not really synth pop, but a lot of synthesizers.
These guys album. Wanted to be like 70s and 80s yacht rock. Like, what the heck?
Who could say yacht rock and mean that in an approving way?
Yeah, I know. Yes.
Like, if you liked it, you'd call it something else, right? Yeah. You'd call it, like, I don't know, melody rock or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It should be melodic.
I mean, like, soft rock is probably not as negative as yacht rock.
Yeah, it was total, like, soft rock. Like, come on. The only thing worse is, okay, if you want to do soft rock, write your own. Don't, like, cover the soft rock crap that already exists, you know? But I don't know, what's a worse crime? Writing your own soft rock or covering existing soft rock? Because if you write your own, you're adding to the volume of soft rock that exists. Why?
I don't know.
I'm just thankful for Douglas Stank that we exist. All right, so did we play our last track?
Let's play it and let people decide for themselves who did it better, us or Joy Division. Yeah.
Nearest passerby, she's lost control.
partial, but I, you know, maybe we're a little biased, but I think we did it better.
The original version did not have Glockenspiel.
Right, exactly. That's one big negative on them. Like, what were they thinking? No Glockenspiel?